Hey, it's Tony Schiavone of AAW, and you are listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks with Phil J. and that pain in the ass, Choppy.
Your shows, your entertainment, and your network. This is Rant and Rave.
Remember, what this network wants, this network gets. I promise you that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening.
Broadcasting live from Shaolin, Staten Island.
Freak Show Central.
Where's that?
New York City.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. It's the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast on Rant EM Radio. Proud member of the Shining Wizards Network and Dark Satellite Media.
I mean, it should record. Yeah, it's recording. All right, good. All right. Okay, cool. Yeah, again, this is why I fucking technology constantly fails me. Constantly. Where is the screen? I just had it. Oh, boy. Where is it? 12:15, 12:17. There you go. All right. Now, why can't you see me? Oh boy, because I have the wrong fucking camera on it. That's why.
I see part of the TV.
Yeah, I have the show camera, but it doesn't. It won't. Oh, this is ridiculous. Hold on. Appearance camera.
Hey, mom just called. You might call her back.
Yeah, call mom back. Let her know the deal. Blah 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 blah. Why is it not doing this? You son of a bee. All right. Well, at least we got the camera. Got that. Additional settings. No. Appearance. Let's see. Appearance. No, I don't care about Google. Why is it not cooperating? You there, right?
Yep, I'm here.
Watch together. Ooh. Ooh, let's watch together. Oh, you know we can... Oh, you know, hold on a second. I wonder if we can watch the fucking pay-per-view. The thing. Uploads. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's fucking... Was that? What the hell was that? What the hell was this? Oh, that's a show. That's a concert.
This one's for you,
Mike. Ah, that's one for you, buddy. Where the fuck am I? That's right there. Anyway, no. Nah, I mean the audio. I just want to know why. I want to put the camera on me, but it won't let me. Oh, settings. Hold on, let me try this. Oh boy, there we go.
Oh,
there it is. What a fucking shit show, man. This thing is terrible. I am no good at this. And 10 years in, I should be stoned. I should be at the fucking stake. They should be stoning me like they did back in the day. I think they have. Don't they still do the? How do they do executions in Utah? Do they have the fucking the guns still? They line people up and shoot them?
Probably. It wouldn't surprise me. So, especially southern Utah.
Fucking Mormons, anyway. Anyway. What are you sleeping? What are you doing today?
Me? I was shoveling, and then I was working, and now I'm doing this, and then I'm going back to work after that.
Oh, you going back to work?
And I got the last one tonight.
What are you going to do if they fucking strike? You got another gig lined up?
Oh, yeah, that's just my part-time job, so.
Okay, all right.
I work from home, so. Yeah, that's just part-time, so. Super part-time, so,
all right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll find out by Sunday if this is going to go down anyway. All right.
Yeah.
All right, so listen, this is it. Big day, though, because this is like an anniversary day. Today is the 30th anniversary of Vocal Display of Power. I'm very excited about that. My opening show is in Pantera tonight.
Wow, really? 30 years old?
Oh, I remember begging my mom for fucking car fare because someone got me a ticket, but it was all the way in the Nassau Coliseum. So now you know where I used to live in Queens because you stay. So now the Nassau Coliseum is like on the suburbs of the five boroughs. It's in Long Island. Not that far, but far enough if you have no car. So you
right.
have to, you have to go to Jamaica, take a fucking a train, a subway, not subway, just a train to a bus.
Yeah,
I begged him for coffee. I was like, just get me to the fucking show. I have a ticket. Crazy. Anyway, all right.
I've seen them 1.5 times. I saw them. Crowbar opened up for them.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was the only time I've seen, like, the mosh pit didn't stop even between shows. Like, it was straight, yeah, the whole entire time. It was fucking bananas. And, of course, I'm Mr. fucking Bright, so I took a bunch of fucking speed beforehand, so I'm all fucking amped up. And
Jesus Christ. I went back in 94, and Sepultura was supposed to open for them. Okay?
Oh.
It gets better. So it's the World Cup that year, and Brazil is, like, on fire. They actually beat Italy in the finals, and I talk about that because my landlord, who's Italian, off the boat, bet all the rent money on the game and lost. Hmm. And then his wife didn't know about it, and she came to collect the rent. And mom's like, no, we already gave him the rent. So six rents.
Oh.
Yeah, good fun. That's a good story. Anyway, so Sepultura is supposed to open, right? Max breaks his knee fucking around playing soccer.
I remember that.
So Max breaks his knee and Prong opens up.
Yep.
And it was dope. And Phil kept making, and when Pantera opened, you know, in a headline, Phil kept making all these, like, New York references, like, oh, what's up there? We got Biohazard in the crowd. And they did, like, four bars of Tales from the Heart. So it was pretty funny. But, yeah.
Yeah, I missed that show. But, yeah, they played at Alpine Valley that same tour. So, yeah, I remember. I missed that one, but. Yeah, it was fucking bananas. So, I mean, I'm all jacked up on speed. And then, of course, I'm smoking a bunch of weed. So when this Love comes on, you know, the heavy parts gets on. Like, and then the slow part, I'm like, oh, dude, it was, yeah. And then the halftime I saw him was Ozfest.
I saw
VOD. VOD was playing at the same fucking time.
On the other stage, yes, exactly.
Yeah. So me, my two buddies and three other people are watching fucking VOD by ourselves on Pantera's playing, so.
Yeah, I saw VOD also. I wanted to see VOD. I had to see VOD, you know, I had to.
Yeah, I saw them in a bowling alley once, too. It was one of the funnest shows I ever went to in my life, so. Yeah, I was down in Chicago, so I mean, I may dislike Chicago, but man, they know how to fucking do it down there, though.
So you know what? All right, so let's get right into this. Let me premise this by saying that I didn't get into Ring of Honor until 2007. So my first show was Final Battle 07.
Wow,
I think that was I want to say it was Danielson and Homicide. Hold on a second. Let me just look that up real quick while I'm on the horn with you. It was the Hammerstein Ballroom, and my brother was supposed to go with me, and he never went. He fucking, because I took him to see Slayer that same year, but he was like, what the hell was going on that day with him? I bought a bunch of tickets that night, that weekend. No, it was. Bryan Danielson won a four-way. He beat Morishima, Chris Hero, and Austin Aries. And then the age of the four was Jimmy Jacobs and Tyler Black against the Briscoes for the tag team title.
Wow.
Yeah, and then it was Larry Sweeney beat Claudio. We all know who Claudio is now. Jack Evans beat Necro Butcher. Mara Fuji and Davey Richards. That was a great match.
Davey Richards.
Yeah. Adam Page, BJ Whitmer, and Brent Albright beat Delirious, Steen, and Generico. Rocky Romero beat Ernie Osiris. I forgot what Ernie Osiris it was. And for the FIP title, I don't know what the hell that was. It was some indie title. But Eric Stevens beat Roddy for it. So.
Dude, Roddy was so good in Ring of Honor.
I know. And, you know, it's funny because this guy was, Feinstein was so prominent at this point, because he was the only, like, basically the only act in town that was selling gimmicks, like videos and shit like that. And I really didn't do a lot of indie shows at this point, because I was going to fucking, I just started my career, like, in, like, for pay in, like, 1999. So I really wasn't going to shows, really. But when I did go to, like, a convention or something like that, he was the dude. He had the only table with all the gimmicks. So yeah. when Ring of Honor opened up, I was like, all right. And I religiously read the magazines just to, you know, while I was at work and shit. I would get the magazines while I was on the truck and whatever. But I didn't get into it until then. So this show particularly, I was pleased, believe it or not. I was, because it felt like what we're watching now with GCW.
Yeah.
It had that feel to it. I mean, it helped that it was in Philly, right?
The crowd was, for an initial show, you know, I mean, obviously they're starving because, you know, ECW just, I mean, what's 18 months earlier or probably a little less, but.
Correct.
Yeah, I was just fascinated that, I mean, this basically company started so RF Video could, I mean, they lost their biggest video seller in ECW and they just started a wrestling promotion to sell fucking videos.
Pretty much. Yeah. And you know, as much as we give him shit too, he and all the stuff that he was allegedly accused of,
right.
He's still the guy. Like he has a streaming network and he's putting everything on digital but I know that he owned it and then Kari Silken was involved with him. It was right. for a minute and then like I think it's up until 2004, I believe it was.
I think that's where I read too, so yeah.
So then it went, and then of course Sinclair bought it, but
for 2011, so
yeah, so it was, you know, I was pleased, and I saw an exchange online. We'll get into the first match in a second. That you really weren't aware of Dan Moff at that point,
right?
But we were, because again with the yeah. indies, it was the Rottweilers, it was that school that Brooklyn school. It was him, Mac, Red, I think it was Brian XL, the SATs.
Hmm. I can't believe they just had a match against the Briscoes like last week.
Yeah, they're back. But like all these guys were in the same camp. Homicide were in the same camp. But what Feinstein did was he cherry picked the indies, took his connection. He even took guys from the Shawn Michaels school, which was Danielson, yeah. Michael Shane, all those guys, and we'll get into that in a minute. But I must thank you. I can't wait to show this to Choppy. I'm sure he remembers it because he was a big Ring of Honor head. When this all started out. So I didn't get a chance to do it. I was so fucking busy with life.
Yeah, I just started watching Ring of Honor. I mean, I didn't get back into wrestling until 2016. So I mean, I went back and I've watched every final battle. And obviously, not to put over my own podcast, but I mean, now that's why we're doing the Ring of Honor TV from 2012.
Right.
Because I'm watching all that shit fresh.
Yeah.
I know most of the stories and everything, but yeah, man, this fucking pay-per-view, or whatever you want to call it, was pretty stacked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get right into it. Let's see. I'm going to pull up. Let's see. Let me pull up this.
And very serendipitously, Danny Moff is the first person that followed me on Twitter.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So Ring of Honor was based out of Maryland. Based out of Maryland now. But Rob Feinstein, being from Philly, he had it. And then it went to Kari Silken from 2004 to 2011 and then was sold to Sinclair. So, it's been a fun ride. But their very, very first show, and we've been talking about this way before you guys even thought about doing a podcast anyway. The Choppy want to do this, and then of course TNA starts this year too, 20 years ago. But you know, Rob tried to join Combat Zone, and he didn't. It wasn't a thing. He wasn't able to. So, like you said, to fill that ECW void, he starts his own fucking promotion. This is beyond. So the Murphy Rec Center. I've never been there. We've drove past it, you and I, a bunch of times. I've only been to the arena in Philly, and the old Spectrum, and then Wells Fargo for NXT and the Flyers, sadly. But this is the very first Ring of Honor card. The era of Honor begins February 23rd, 2002. I don't know the exact amount of people this thing held. You want to give it a guesstimate? I don't know.
I maybe 500 might be a little high, but I mean, because it was so loud.
Yeah.
But I'd say between 250 and 500.
Okay.
Yeah, I tried tracking down the attendance, but I couldn't find it. Me being not very good internet savvy, so.
No, I am. I did my homework. It's got to be at least at or a little under 1,000. Could be 500. Could be 800. I'm thinking because the rec center was, it was a multi sport complex gimmick. We have a lot of those. And I don't know if you guys have that where you guys in the Midwest, but out here in New York City, we have like these rec centers that do all. They do indoor sports. They do soccer and basketball and fucking baseball sometimes. They do football. And I know high school teams and college teams use them to do practices and stuff like that. But they hold a lot. They do gymnastic competitions in there, like, and stuff like, you know, national shit too. So I don't know if they do that. We have these multi-sport gimmick. Choppy has a ginormous one where he lives now on Staten Island.
Yeah.
It's basically a half a block long. I've never been in it, but it's fucking huge. So I know that.
Yeah, where GW runs in Chicago, they run at one of those buildings. So, I mean, they're basically running on an arena football field.
Yeah, and WrestlePro does it now in Rawway. And a lot of these are rec centers are ran by the local police departments. So,
okay.
Like, Rawway's at the Rawway Police. I know out here. We go by number precincts, like by borough. So, like, I live near the 122 and 123 where I grew up. It was the 104 and the 83rd. So, like, those precincts, police athletically would actually run these little gimmicks. They would run these little arenas. And I think in Boston, they have Boston PALs, too. A lot of cities have, like, the police athletic leagues that sponsor these places. Because back in the day, the cops were actually role models. Not like now, where some of them are, most of them are, but that's another podcast that we know nothing about. all right, so let's get into it. Yeah. Your first match is
Christopher Street Cannon. Well, so, and it's funny, like, this isn't, I mean, it's an impromptu match. And the reason I got the DVDs is because a bunch of this stuff is not on Honor Club. Like, this was not even mentioned on Honor Club.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got a... Yeah, it was Christopher Street versus the Hit Squad, your boys.
Yeah, Buff E, Mace Mendoza, they were basically Northeast guys, Mid-Atlantic promotions primarily. They did do Jersey All-Pro. They wrestled for Frank Goodman. You know who Frank Goodman is, right? The Masked Maniac.
Yeah.
Don Tony speaks to him very often. Frank Goodman had USA Pro, United States Extreme, whatever the fuck it was. They were pretty prominent at this point, and it was an impromptu match against the Hit Squad, Moff and Mac. Moff and Mac actually got together a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were repeat offenders. Basically, they were known as that. They wrestled in Jersey All Pro and Combat Zone. They were in it for a while. I feel like I grew up with Mac and Moff because they're like my age, maybe a little older. They actually beat Charlie Haas's brother, Russ. In an indie wrestling match. They've been around, man. They've been around. I think they were the first ROH tag team champions. Moff won it.
Makes sense,
right?
Moff came back a couple years ago.
Yeah, Moff won it. Yeah, and then Moff won it twice with, I think, BJ Whitmer, too, who's also a Ring of Honor alum. Original, I should say. But these guys were the goods. And I feel like I grew up with them because when the shows I did see them at, they were just starting out. Christopher Street Connection playing the gimmick, like, totally. Like, it was. Yep. You try doing that shit now, and it's like, it'll be. You know, with the internet the way it is now, it's a fucking it'll be riotous. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they got over. They were holding back. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And So Moff and Mac make very quick work of the Christopher Street Connection, who very
and then they,
kissy huggy feeling
with Allison Danger. By the way,
Allison Danger was their valet. I remember her too.
Do you know who she's related to?
No, I don't.
She's actually Steve Carino's sister. Steve Carino kept calling her a fucking whore and everything on the video.
Who is doing a commentary with Steve Carino?
Eric Gagoli or something like that, or Gagula.
Hey, wifey. Hey. So I was too. I was. Hey. So how are you?
I'm good.
I'm Thank you.
Just get it out to work. So.
Yeah. Go make me some money.
Yeah, go make that. Go make that money.
Yep. All right. Bye, Phil.
Stay safe. So I was totally I forgot who that guy was with Steve Corino, because like I said, I know who all the players are. I never watched it up until this. So
yeah, so it was just I read that and then I was listening to commentary. I was like, wow, he went in on her for sure. And I love Steve Corino. I am a fan. So
yeah, you know my admiration for Steve Corino. And Choppy's too. That infamous trip down to Philly where Choppy showed me the video of him talking about one of his first matches in the Iron Sheik and just ridiculous. Yeah. But in person, he's a really nice guy. We met him a few times, and on top of that, God, his work between this and Scum and people forget that he was an ECW for like a hot minute, and he was champion.
Oh, yeah.
I believe he was champion. I mean, Dusty gave him a little bit of a match at one time, but that was like Dusty was like on the tail end of his life at that point. But yeah. I mean, he wrestled Dusty Rhodes in a bull rope match, and it made headlines. It was a big deal. And then he cut more rope for himself in fucking Japan with 0-1. It's like he constantly evolved as a performer. The problem was there were too many guys ring-wise like him. So he never got that. He never got that upper echelon rub that he was supposed to get, if that makes any sense, right?
Yeah.
But I'm glad he's still around. I'm glad he don't call a commentary and now that I know that's his sister, is she still around? Yeah. Is she still like a thing? Like, is she?
I think she kind of pops up here and there, but I mean, she's still with us, which is good. Not everyone on the show is.
This is true.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like she's done much, so. But I mean, she took that power bomb, though. Woo!
Crazy. Right? Crazy.
One of my favorite matches to this day is still, I mean, Steen and Carino final battle for Steen's career. I love that match. I can't put that match over enough.
Yeah, I think my favorite Steen final battle was him and Mike Bennett. That was 2012 or 11 when he package pile drove him my son and I watched that Christmas day. Like we were killing time getting dressed for Christmas, and he was like, let's watch Ring of Honor. We didn't, you know, we. I was like, okay, we were there, like, you know, whatever. And we watched it, and I was like, yeah. I feel like if it wasn't for Carino, come full circle for Steen, I think Steen needed him in a way. I mean, because Steen wasn't really good on the microphone. Steen barely spoke good English. He was still fucking. He had that French Canadian crippling him. You know not that it's bad, but like. He wouldn't be the guy he would be now. He wouldn't be almost probably headlining a WrestleMania match this year, you know, if it wasn't for Steve Corino, I feel like. And, of course, Generico being his running mate, same thing. Like the I think Corino made a lot of careers. Rhino also.
Oh, yeah.
You know Rhino has the Canadian stank with him also with Edge and Christian. But Rhino can thank him because Steve Corino not only could he work, but he was a mouthpiece. You know, he was Paul Heyman basically almost with talent, with a ring repertoire. So I don't know. It's just, you know, but yeah, I'm glad Steve Corino was on this card as a commentator. I didn't know that was his sister. That's hysterical. That's awesome. They make quick work of the Christopher Street connection. A minute and ten.
And then to the first official match of Ring of Honor. So, I mean, you know, I love the Briscoes. I can't, I mean.
Yeah, you know my admiration for them for the last decade.
You know, I mean, I was trying to think of like any like wrestler or team that is identified with a promotion as much as the Briscoes. Obviously, I mean, they are literally day one.
Before we get to the Briscoes real quick, let's talk about, you know, Mr. Johnny Figueroa, that is Amazing Red. Red,
dude.
Brooklyn guy, in that class with Moff, like I said. Another guy who was that, he was on that, he was one of the first indie darlings.
Yeah.
Basically, right? And his talent was limitless. And I know he gets the rub a lot in the next couple of years with TNA and He had a couple of cups of coffee with the E, I believe, and like dark matches and shit like that. But I can't stress to you enough how important Amazing Red was to the Northeast and to indie wrestling at that point. Because there were only a couple of regions in the country at that point that had prominent indie feds. Like, everywhere had indie feds. Almost every town in America had an indie fed at one point, right? But the Northeast, and this is not being me being New York biased like I usually am, but the Northeast really primarily was a hotbed for indie wrestling. And now it's coming back. And we had this conversation a few times in the last couple of years. Yeah. Now it's like every borough's got a fed now. The Bronx has a fed. Fucking Staten Island's got a fed. Queens has a fed. Like, it's just a couple of feds, actually. But it's Red. I can't stress you how important Red is. I mean, Jay Briscoe more important at this point. Now, looking back at it, funny because Mark wasn't even old enough to wrestle.
And they didn't even reference that, which I thought was kind of funny because they're like, oh, Jay's usually a tag team wrestler. And they kind of no-sold the fact that he wasn't even old enough, which I thought was kind of funny. So
I ripped the DVD to a file, and I bring my little – I have a smaller MacBook I bring to work with me. I keep it at my desk, and I'm watching – again, I watched it again yesterday, and I'm watching Jay, and then I'm watching him cut a promo last night on the Hardy Boys, right? And I'm just like, you could tell, and he was so like unseasoned, but
yeah,
he had that fire though. He was, you know, he had a little bit of a heel in him because they're all about honor, shaking hands and kissing babies, and yeah, I respect you. And Jay was like, nah, fuck that. And Jay was stomping his face at one point. And I was like, man, that's such a good they're so good. But this was a pretty good match, man. This went almost 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was awesome. And real quick side note, do you know who's Amazing Red's cousin?
Currently in WWE?
Yeah.
I
didn't know this till 2 days ago.
Not Punishment Martinez, right?
No, Selena Vega.
Oh, from Queens, by the way.
Yeah.
She's a queen.
So
that's the queen to you.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, she's got a lot of Amazing Red in her. So that sounded bad.
No. The Puerto Rican contingency in New York City is Puerto Rico. I think us and Chicago, I want to say, have the biggest import of Puerto Ricans in the country right now at this point.
That makes sense, yeah.
And that wouldn't surprise me. I wish there was more of a Puerto Rican fucking tree like the Samoans have in wrestling, though, you know, because there's, I mean, a lot of Puerto Ricans didn't. I mean, now it's the ethnicity and the melting pot of all the, I mean, how many shows have you been to here in New York already? And how many walks of life come to these freaking shows, man? And how many walks of life are in the show? So it's like, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. That's actually a cool tidbit. I didn't even know that. So Queens native, Mrs. Alice the Black.
So. Yeah. So, yeah, and then, I mean, obviously SAT, they're all cousins, so yeah. I love those guys. I didn't know much about them until recently, so.
Oh, my God, yeah. The SATs were a staple.
The Spanish announced team. Yeah. What a great name for a tag team.
Yep. So, yeah, Red does beat Briscoe at 8 minutes and 30 seconds. It went almost 10 minutes, like I said.
First code of honor.
Yeah, first code of honor. You know, and the more I'm watching these matches, and I'm like, I'm seeing some of these guys, and I'm like, man, it just the like. So now the next match is did we touch anything else about Jay Briscoe and?
I just got a real couple notes. I mean, was really weird because Jay was he was a lot more airbound in this match than he is later in his career. Obviously,
Jay Briscoe, you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they mentioned that too. They mentioned his aerial tactics. I'm like, what?
and Mark was just great in the back, but I guess Jay was pretty heavily recruited for football, out of Delaware. So I guess supposedly said, I mean, he was an athlete through and through. So
have you been to Delaware?
I have.
What else can you do there besides play sports and go to and raise chickens? There's a good Cracker Barrel right at the Jersey Delaware border. Other than that, there's nothing much to do unless you're surfing. You go there to buy TVs at supermarkets. But
yeah, well, I always make the joke. I've been to all 48 states and I found something awesome about all of them except for Delaware. So
no, the only thing that's awesome about Delaware is the fucking Briscoes.
Yeah.
So there is something awesome in Delaware. And Papa Briscoe. I love Papa Briscoe.
Yeah, last time I was down there, we almost drove down to Sandy Fork, but it was like an hour and a half. It's like, one of these days, so.
You'll drive right through it. It's like John Cena's neighborhood. I literally drove through John Cena's neighborhood in Massachusetts going to Woodbury Comics. Newberry Comics. I literally drove through his neighborhood. I was like, yeah, cause, and the guy in the store was like, oh, because you're still a wrestling show. You're a wrestling fan? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you know, John Cena lives over here. He's like, yeah. I said, he lives around the corner, right? Because I just drove through the fucking neighborhood. It's not very big. But yeah, Delaware's got the Briscoes. They got nice beaches there, actually. Other than that, yeah, but that's pretty much it. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Carry on.
Oh, yeah. That's all I had on that one. So, and then we go to that funny low-key promo and.
Oh.
He's a whack. A whack job in the most. I mean that as a compliment. The guy's a fucking psychopath. And he doesn't talk much later on. And once we get to the match, but I mean, you don't see him without a shirt, but that dude's fucking shredded.
He reminds me of someone who's ashamed of their heritage. And what I mean by that is, I don't want to sound like choppy.
Yeah.
Right? But. I know people that I grew up with, my ex-wife too, and she'll admit this, that have that stank of having an accent, like a New York accent or an ethnic accent, right? And she was so turned off by her accent, she tried so hard in school to get rid of it. And I feel like low-key had that stank on him too. Like he wanted to talk like this and be a warrior. You know, and he sounded like a dude from Gauntlet. Remember the old video game Gauntlet? Warrior needs food badly. That's what he sounded like, right? But I feel like he's one of those dudes. Like he was ashamed of who he was in real life, and couldn't get that, and maybe couldn't get like enough chutzpah, as the Jewish community would say, to have another to work on the gimmick. You know, like. But
yeah.
I'm a warrior, and I'm going to talk like this, and I'm prim and proper, and I'm going to beat you up with my stiff kicks, and I won't sell. Right?
And he wasn't kidding.
He was not kidding at all. He was not kidding at all, partner. He was not kidding at all. All right, your next match, pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, we know – what's that? Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't know much about – actually, real quick, there was a real quick Natural Born Sinners promo.
Oh, yes. Yeah, just
with Homicide and Boogaloo, and they went back to their old neighborhood, and it wasn't there anymore. So that kind of
sense of objectification.
I love fucking Homicide. That guy just speaking of nut job.
That's my man. Right there.
Yeah, Xavier. I mean, Xavier had a good run after this.
Yeah, Xavier was trained by Tony DeVito or the Baldies, believe it or not. Again, another guy that we know from the Indies.
Yeah.
Going up against the quote-unquote black nature boy, Scoot Andrews. Scoot had a little bit of a career. He's from down south. He's from the Carolinas.
Yeah.
But he had a bit of a career for himself a little bit. But, Xavier Red, those guys were supposed to be going places.
Right.
Trent Acid, all these guys were like, they were supposed to be the next generation of superstars coming up. This was right before Punk. This was right before all the other light guys. And then, of course, the Mexican invasion from, like, 96. I'm talking about, you know, that Paulie when he brought over Mysterio and Psicosis. And then, of course, you know, Eric Bischoff being in bed with Triple A and Conan and bringing over La Parker and every fucking luchador that Triple A had that main evented at one point. Including like Ciclope and all those other guys, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Xavier was that guy. He was the guy. He was supposed to, he was a complete package too. He looked good.
Oh, it looked amazing.
Right? He worked his ass off, and it was just seeing this. And I can't thank you enough that you brought this back to me, because I'm telling you, like, just seeing these guys, I remember seeing these guys in person, meaning Red, Xavier. Yeah. The Squad, Homicide, who I hold near and dear to me, because again, it's that New York fucking bias, right? But Xavier was the guy. He was supposed to be the guy. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know why he wasn't more than what he was. But this match was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a lot. And, I mean, he's the second Ring of Honor champion. So, I mean, he beat Loki for the title later on this year.
Right.
Or 2003. So, and he passed away not too long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I just never knew why he didn't be anything bigger than what he was.
Yeah, he had everything.
Yeah. He, I guess he was trained by Tony DeVito. I know that. Let me see if I get anything. I'm just trying to look him up now. He died last year at 42 years old.
I couldn't. I mean, yeah, this is, I mean, this is, it was, this is a hoss fight. You know, and Scoop pretty much beat himself just being angry because, I mean, because he hit his finisher and then Xavier's leg was under the rope, you know, and the ref like, oh, no. And then he spent like 2 minutes pissing and moaning and then Xavier just fucking broke his neck. It was awesome. So,
well, I like these finishes too because, and we'll get into that with Super Crazy and Eddie Guerrero in a little while. But like these, when two face guys fight each other, sometimes when two technicos wrestle like each other like that, this happens a lot in Mexico. You get those quick, unexpected finishes, and you're like, sometimes it'll kill a match, and you've heard me talk about that a lot of times on the throwbacks. But, or it'll set something up for something else. Or it'll just be like, all right, you know what? You messed up. Now I'm taking advantage. Quick. And that's what happened with Scoot. He, you said, he basically beat himself. So,
Which is all. And then he no-sells the Code of Honor. But then, you know, Xavier's like, oh, no, this is Ring of Honor. So they came back and hugged it out afterwards. So I thought that was a nice touch. But
there's a match I want to see from Xavier. I think he fought Joe in, like, 03. I don't know if it's on Honor Club. You might have to give me the password if you still have it, or I'll have to look it up. But there was a match, some kind of tournament they had. I forget what it was, but I know he fought Jaw. I really want to see that match. Just seeing him again made me think about that match. Again, a lot of times a lot of these matches get referenced in like the magazines, and right before when the early 2000s hit, there was a huge, and I think you know this for as well. There's a big message board contingency.
Yeah.
You know, so this before we had social media, obviously. But he was a talk of the town for a good couple of years, you know.
Oh yeah, and you get this match, you can see why.
Yeah, he was the goods, man. I liked him. So rest in peace.
Yeah, yeah, he was definitely one of the ones I'm gonna have to dig into more that I didn't know much about before I saw this. So,
well, now that the Fed's 20 years old, I feel like we can do its due diligence and as a collective, as a collective now, we can all of us go into it and do more like shit like this and dive into Ring of Honor. You know, this should be a, you know, now the Ring of Honor is 20 years old. It should be its own fucking podcast at this point. And that's what you guys are. You guys just you and your buddy gonna be doing just Ring of Honor, right? Is it?
Yeah. Well, on that podcast, yeah.
Yeah.
But basically, what we do is we're just watching Ring of Honor TV, like. Because I almost fell back into wrestling 5 years earlier because of Ring of Honor, but I mean, that's another story itself. But we just watch it. I mean, watching review the TV and like the anniversary show is this week. So we're just kind of like basically just reviewing as it happened. Like, for example, like this last episode aired February 25th, 2012, and the episode's going to drop February 26th, 2022. So it's like we just watched it the next day. So,
all right.
But I've gone back and I've watched every final battle because I missed all of this, you know. So I have at least a decent history. That's where I first saw, and I watched. Speaking of TNA, All the Bone for Glory. So that's where I first saw Amazing Red in those X Division matches. Just like, who the fuck is this guy?
Exactly.
So.
And it sets up for guys like Joe and you know Christopher Daniels around this time too. Yeah. It's it that's his, you know. He's still the elder statesman in this. You know he's. Because we'll talk about that in a second. But anything else? Of course. Anything else on Xavier or Scoot, the Black Nature Boy Andrews?
Yeah, just loved it. Both these guys. I'll be looking forward to finding out more about Xavier. So,
all right, your next match.
Oh, I loved everything about this match.
All right, so we got the Boogie Knights. Mike Tobin and Danny Drake, not just again indie guys.
I didn't look like they did much after this. So
against Mr. 187, our boy Homicide, and Boogaloo, another fucking New Yorker, Queens native, by the way, same hometown as fucking OG Kevin Gill. Shout out to College Point, Queens. Boogaloo, another indie darling from the Northeast. And I always called him Boogaloo Lou, but it was Boogaloo, and I kept messing that up when I was younger. But I'm glad I was now that I'm a podcaster, I should be saying these guys' names right. But
now it didn't look like Boogaloo did much after this, though.
No, he didn't.
Okay,
a lot of guys didn't. Like I said, a lot of guys were supposed to be again tearing it up, but there was no other companies at this point. Right,
yeah,
like you said, ECW was gone almost 2 years now. Right at this point, one was the
a little over a year,
right? And nothing else. Like there was nothing else except for indies or go up to fucking Stanford.
Yeah,
which again didn't happen to a lot of guys, and you know it these things fade out. They fade out. What the hell? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in a group text with my other podcasters. working on tonight's show,
I just love you come out in the Michael Myers masks and come out with a fucking chainsaw. not like a WWF chainsaw. It was a legit chainsaw. I was man, like I said, what a bunch of fucking psychopaths. I loved it.
This event belonged in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
you've been to Philly now a few times. Okay, yeah. You understand the culture, and you're a pretty smart fan because you're friends with us too, right? But that's another reason why you're a smart fan. But you and I'm all jokes aside though, you know the lineage that Philly has now with wrestling, and even though I hate some of their sports teams and some of their people, but they have an amazing town, and the lineage is great with the wrestling. Like we talk about the Spectrum. I was on a rant the other night. And we talk about the Spectrum. And, you know, Surfer is from Philly. He's native. And it was important, again, that Northeast stank. And I'm going to keep referring to that during this whole podcast because it was so prominent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go down to the Southeast and you're like, hey, what about us? And that's another reason why Paulie deliberately put in Philly because he knew the lineage. He knew knew that he couldn't hang in New York. He didn't know. Actually, let me rephrase that. He didn't know if he could hang in New York. Meanwhile, everybody who ran the fucking Fed was from New York. You know, him, Tommy, Bubba, anybody who ran it or booked it was from New York City at that point. Joel Gertner, Brooklynite, same thing. So it was whatever. But this match alone, it had to be in Philly. Had to be in Philly. But the match was really good.
And speaking of Philly, this is kind of off topic. I don't have a bell or anything, but I mean, in Philly hardcore right now is really kind of taking the flag. You know, I listen to Joe Hardcore a bunch, man, and they're fucking killing it down there. I know Done Deal's kind of done, unfortunately. The OG's band love the guys, but
yeah. Well, I think because of the festival they do every year now, I think it's
back this year.
Yeah, I know. But these things are not. I mean, hardcore music's never going to go away. It's just that it's a different time, and guys can. I mean, our heroes are either
old.
Yeah, but not only are they old, but it's the scene is different. Music's different. Same with wrestling. Yeah. Wrestling went to streaming and YouTube and iPay-per-views. Music went to streaming. They don't do videos really anymore. They don't fucking you can't make money off of selling records anymore. Either either streaming music or you're playing shows. Indie wrestlers, either streaming on paper, you're either streaming on TV or you're selling your merch. Exactly. Yep. Right. Or you're doing shows. That's why it's going to cost me, if I want to see Rage Against the Machine in August, it'll cost me at least $200 to sit remotely close if I want to do it, right? I'm not saying I will. I'm saying if I want to, right? But, you know, it's insane how that works. It's like my friend pays because he loves Kiss. He'll mortgage his house to do like the VIP gimmick, right? And I'm like, you're an idiot. But
can't imagine how much that costs. So. Right
now, I paid 10 years ago. I paid $150 for a VIP with Ozzy. That same VIP now, that was 10 years ago though. That VIP now is probably double that, maybe even triple, depending on what city you're in too. Music, the same thing. So the hardcore scene, the hardcore scene down south is coming up again, and they're playing in fucking barns and VFWs and all this other shit. And you're like, okay. And same thing with Cali, man. When Terra said we're not going to hang out, Terra took New York hardcore to Cali,
right,
and set it off. No pun intended. Set it off. No pun intended. And I'm telling you, it's like it's. And wrestling did that. And you look at Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, okay?
Yeah.
See, there, nothing like that was going on in Cali. You know what you had in Cali? Lucha. You always had lucha shows. Those lucha guys would always come over the border. No matter what year it was, they'd have these huge galas in like these halls, like at VFW halls and fucking cotton, minor league baseball stadiums and shit like that. They would have all these gimmicks. And when you move it over like that, it's the same thing. Music and wrestling go hand in hand. You see the similarities. It's not by coincidence, brother. It's not.
Not at all.
It's that kind of party. So,
yeah, and I'm pretty fortunate too because Chicago's got a very good lucha presence, and there's a really awesome. I mean, they're bringing in Penta. I mean, they bring in Lucha Underground stars all the fucking time, but they run in the back of a warehouse or back of a SWAT meet.
Yeah, and don't think the wrestlers don't know that either. You know, Penta doesn't have to take the payday. Penta works for the hottest promotion right now in wrestling. So either he really wants the money, and or he wants to be where it's at.
I think it's a little bit of balls.
Yeah, look at Paulie, man. Paulie brought in Doc and Gordy from Japan. Okay,
Doc and Gordy.
Paulie brought Jake Robertson. He brought Rick Rude. He brought all these guys in, and because guys wanted to be there, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure Penta now looks at YouTube and goes, "Oh, that fucking Fed in Chicago. Let's go, man." You know, I'm sure his brother did the same thing. And all these guys, it's not by coincidence. And Ring of Honor is one of the reasons why this happened. Ring of Honor is probably the reason why a lot of these guys and girls had jobs. Because it took what was their slogan? They're innovative.
Oh, shit. I wrote it down.
On the fucking banner behind the gimmick. But like
not imitating, innovating or something like that?
Yeah, we're not imitating. We're innovating, right?
Yeah.
So it's like. That's by design, Matt. That's by design, brother. You can't. I mean, it all comes full circle, and I'm just. That's why we love it so much, you know.
Yeah.
All right, moving right along. Oh, sorry. So Boogie Nights against Natural Born Sinners, of course, Homicide and Boogaloo. But the Boogie Nights get a win by disqualification. You want to get into this a little bit, or?
I do actually. Before we do, I don't know if you knew this, but Boogaloo was actually a legit wrestler. He was a 2-time New York State champ.
He was. Empire State.
Yeah.
The same competition that Mr. Peter Sinercha won. Second damn in judo. No bullshit. Taz wasn't a lot of guys who had a amateur wrestling background or a shoot. A lot of guys amateur wrestling or comes martial arts. Empire State Games. That was the precursor to going to Pan American or the Olympics or
nice.
Yeah, if you win that, you go to Nationals. You go to Nationals, you go to fucking Pan Am. You win Pan Am, you go to the Olympics. And I'm sure our buddy Eric Martin, who's a martial arts guy, can probably correct me a little bit on that and probably smoke. But it's that line. A lot of guys had that pedigree though, man. So
yeah, and watching this match, he could fucking work. I mean, he was wrestling.
Yep.
I was like, wow, holy shit.
Yep.
They win by it did. Boogie Nights didn't get a lot of offense in, but they got the win.
It's true.
Absolutely. But yeah, the kicking that that Homicide took from his old project. He's beat these guys with rubber chickens. What the fuck does that even mean?
He's you know, Ring of Honor has that podcast that they've had for like the last year or two. I was listening to him last year. He's not very I don't want to use the word articulate. He's not. He's very, very street, and he's got that, and he has a heavy slang to him, so it's kind of hard to listen to him do like legit interviews because he's not that guy. I mean, he'll tell you what he's gonna do to you
right.
in the ring. He's beaten guys. He just fought Moxley recently, and it was like, And I was like, man, well, I'm getting into Moxley, but it was a good match, right? You saw the match, right?
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, that's right. You were there for that. Jesus Christ. I forgot about that. That was the X-Pac night too, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So he knocked his tooth out, right? He gets his tooth knocked out, right? And they had the camera on the tooth. And I'm like, I'm just watching it. And I'm like, you know what, man? He deserves it. He deserves to be there. Not deserves to get his tooth knocked out. He deserves the way he is because there's certain guys that you're not going to get the million-dollar promo from them. You're not.
Yeah.
For him, you don't need it. He is everything I love about wrestling because he respects the past. He does. He could stiff you. He could take it to the. Yeah. At one point, he could take it to the air. He could submit you. He can kick the shit out of you. You know what I'm saying? Like he had that. He was really big into Japan, and he was big into he was big into old NWA Mid Atlantic. So he was.
Yeah.
That's me, man. I love all the aspects of pro wrestling. You can't be a fan of pro wrestling if you just and I let me take that back. A lot of the younger kids now, I won't watch anything else but All Japan. I won't watch anything else but Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. Okay, I won't watch anything else but Game Changer. Okay, that's fine. But you're not allowing yourself to dip back into the lineage, or you're not allowing yourself to watch other styles of wrestling to be a complete fan of something like that. You know, I love baseball. I watch a Japanese baseball game. Is it different from the States? 100%. I watch arena football. Is it like fucking? Is it like the NFL? No, it's a circus. But
you have to, and
Homicide took everything he learned and then evolved it. And he wrestled all over the world too. So I take, and this is just no exception for him. This was like, you know, and this was young in his, this was early in his career too. So
yeah, I mean, talk about living the gimmick. I mean, he was just himself turned up to 42.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to this day, I mean, for the style that he works and he lives and the way he's still going at it great today is a testament. I mean, you know, I'm surprised the guy can even walk, and he's thriving. So, and I think people are, it's a lot of, you know, a lot of the retro are going back and he's really starting to get his appreciation out too. I think people understand that Homicide is, I mean, day one. So yeah, I loved everything about this fucking match. Yeah, and they beat up the. So is the ref somebody? He's the extreme official. I couldn't find anything on that guy.
Oh no, he was an ECW referee, I believe. I believe he was.
Yeah, because he cut a promo, but man, and like you said, this could only happen in Philly because that crowd was fucking bananas for this match.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. It was a good match, and the crowd made the show. Believe it or not, you know.
Yeah,
the crowd made the show.
I mean, for a first time ever show, that's amazing.
Yeah. All right. So your next match was a ultimate aerial elimination match. Again, a lot of the moves were still primitive. A lot of the stuff was still like, you know, the guys doing plunges and suicide dives. They weren't calling them that back then, you know.
Steve Corino's like, I don't know what to call that. That's a dive. You know,
this is why I, even though I can't stand Excalibur, he's one of the guys that pretty much refined move sets and guys because he knows all the moves. And Shivani ain't doing that, and neither is Jim Ross. You know, they know this shit by proxy because they've been around for 50 years. I'm exaggerating, but for a long time. But Excalibur, Joey Styles, guys like that, you know, Joe Gatti now from NWA, Ian Riccoboni, like these guys can really like call a match now because of this was the infancy, I guess it is, of the cruiserweight X division, light heavyweight, whatever you want. I mean, those titles have always been around, especially in the NWA. Matter of fact, one of the light heavyweight champions was Mike Jackson. He was one of the greatest wrestlers on the planet. He was a job guy in the NWA in the late 80s. You go on a network, watch any fucking NWA Saturday Night Show from like 85 to 89, 88. And a guy named Mike Jackson. He wears a singlet, and he's balding, but he was one of the greatest light heavyweights of all time. He was a light heavyweight champion, but he was a job guy. because it wasn't prominent. It was almost like women's wrestling. It was almost like an attraction. Light heavyweights, the midgets, and women. They were all I can't say midgets no more, right? It's little people. Okay.
Vertically challenged.
Okay, so the vertically challenged female and light heavyweight matches were a novelty. They weren't part of the actual card in terms of promoting the card. It was always the bottom of the card slash or curtain jerker slash card subject to change. Guys couldn't show up. All right, we'll throw Lord Littlebrook in there, you know. Oh, Mike Jackson's here. Let him fight, you know, a 19-year-old Brad Armstrong because you don't know. But Mikey Whipwreck at this point was right removed from ECW. Mikey Whipwreck, again, has his own promotion, still does. He trained guys like Mike Mondo. He trained a bunch of guys. He actually trained a lot of these guys in this match. So it was quiet storm.
Yeah, I remember Brian XL, I guess, were his guys.
Yes, Brian XL was his guy. Amazing Red comes back out. Chris Devine, and of course the SATs. Joe.
And Quiet Storm, didn't seem much out of him for after this, but
didn't do much. I know he was trained by Mikey Whipwreck. I know that, and I know he went to Japan and did stuff for Michinoku Pro. I can't find anything on him though.
Okay.
So Taka, I know, and that's a good pedigree to have to be trained by Mikey Whipwreck and Taka Michinoku. And I think he still lives in Japan. I'm not sure. I have to confirm that. But yeah, it was a good match. You know, Mikey Whipwreck was the referee.
It's really a continuation of what, you know, obviously, like we talked about earlier, Bischoff bringing all in the luchadors and then ECW. And this is kind of like that next step, in this match. Right. So it was awesome.
Yeah.
SAT, I don't know if this is fact, but I guess they're the ones that actually invented the Spanish fly. And they pulled one off in this match that was pretty awesome. So, you know, I have to really dig into those guys too. I've heard of them, but man,
well, you're a broadcast journalist now. You have, now you do your homework. Once you record something, you're a broadcast. I'm not saying you're a good broadcast journalist. I'm saying
not at all.
No, stop. I'm joking. But once you dive into something like this, even if you're doing current shit, it's so hard not to go back and look at something. You and I do it with music all the time. Like, if I hit you to a band, you hit me to a band, I'm like, all right, now I got to dig. Where are they from? Who are they with? Who did they tour with? And there's always a connection. There's always a connection somewhere. For me, it means everything because I instilled that in Michael when he was growing up. You know, I taught Michael, well, if you like this, like that. You know, and there was one year where I believe he was in kindergarten or first grade. He basically spent an entire summer just watching the Summer of Punk. You know, and he watched it, and he was like, all right, and now you know Punk, but now he wants to know about IWA Mid-South. Now he wants to know about Colt Cabana. Now he wants to know about Samoa Joe and Austin Aries and Chris Hero and Claudio and the Briscoe, and he goes on, and we're going on, and now you're digging. There's always an origin of some sort. There's always something to go back to. These guys were innovators because tag team wrestling was so prominent when I was growing up.
Yeah.
It kind of lost its – I want to say lost its way, but at this time, you had – I don't know. There's a word I want to use, but it's on the tip of my tongue. But you know, when you're watching early 2000s WWF, WWE, they were tag teams by necessity. You had a couple of established tag teams. You had ENC. You had the Hardys. And then you had the Dudleys, right? But then you didn't have Ted. You had guys thrown together. You know, it was like only Japan had tag teams at that point. Mexico had trios teams. You didn't have tag teams. You have tag teams now because Tony Khan respects the game, you know? And the Indies have tag teams up the wazoo, right? But the SATs were bringing that back. They were bringing that shit back. They were bringing it back, and Ring of Honor brought it back with the Hero, with the Briscoes, and then a World's Greatest Tag Team, and then they had Moff and Mac, and they had B.J. Whitmer, and I forgot his. They had the Haas brothers, Russ and Charlie, besides him and Shelton Benjamin. So Charlie Haas was two tag teams at that point.
I remember that.
Yeah, and then you had all the teams. You had the fall, Austin Aries, Tyler Black, you had all these guys, you had all these tag teams, Carino and all those other guys. They brought it back, and the SCT is one of the first teams to do that. So for them to be in this kind of match and not be together, you know, it's every man for himself. But Mikey Whipwreck is still doing it, man. So Mikey
Good Whipwreck, to hear. I mean, the guy made a career out of, I mean,
first trip talking, to Carolina.
Yeah, making chicken salad out of chicken shit.
First,
you know,
first ECW Triple Crown winner. An accident. He was an accident, dude. He was setting the ring up. He was setting the ring up, just taking bumps, just bouncing off the ropes, taking bumps and messing around with the guys. Oh, let's put him in the ring. Wins every fucking title in the Fed. With prominent guys, too. Sandman, Mick Foley, Raven. Yeah. So, I mean, Sabu, you know what I'm saying? Steve Austin.
Yeah.
I was there for that, you know. But you see my point. So the again, another team, another group of guys is still, it's the origin of it, you know, and they can't even find names for this shit.
So, yeah.
All right. Let's see.
Yeah. I saw that Quiet Storm's the one that wins the match. So,
yeah. So I got, so it went, it was elimination match. So Maximo beats Amazing Red. Chris Devine then beats Brian Excel. Quiet Storm beats Jose Maximo. Then Joel Maximo beats Chris Devine, and of course, like you said, Quiet Storm beats Joel Maximo at 15:56. Yeah. So the match went almost 16 minutes. So
and those second last two were at the same time too, which is kind of funny. You don't see that very often. So it was the double pin.
Oh yeah, the Quiet Storm. Yeah, 11:36. You're talking about. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was a fun match. It was less than it really gave me something to dig into for the future. So
yeah, I'm telling you, you're gonna be pleasantly surprised. When you start digging, as DJs would do, they dig the crates. You dig the crates.
All right.
I found a throwback for tonight's show, by accident.
Because I love shit like that. We
didn't have a topic tonight. I didn't know if I was gonna have these two idiots in the studio with me tonight, but now all of a sudden they're gonna be here. So now it's like, oh my god, we're all gonna be in studio together. It's like a fucking party. I found something. I'm like, we did this match, but I want to do the rematch to this. And I found the promos. I dug the crates.
Nice.
Once you do your homework, it's so fun, man. It's so fun. And now that Ring of Honor is 20 years old, now I gotta go back. I missed the first 4 or 5 years, so this is all for me too. I missed the first almost 5 years of Ring of Honor. I gotta dig the crates now. You know, I gotta keep up with the Joneses, man. I'm not a young fucking buck anymore. No pun intended.
Yeah, that next show we'll talk about it, man. But I'm really intrigued by that main event of the next show. But listen, we'll get to that when it comes. So
correct. All right. Go ahead.
And we've got Towel Boy versus Prince Nana. I do love the towel, the rope cleaning gimmick, though.
That was from ECW.
Okay.
David
Chant.
His name was what's his name? Eric something. Eric Tuttle, and he was in ECW. Yeah. He was the mop guy, and he was Towel Boy. They would train Towel Boy, and he'd come out, and this is right after the EMTs were called Damage Control. They were these jumpsuits. They were really EMTs too, by the way. And after they come out, he would come out, and they would clean the room. They take the guys out to the dressing room, whatever, or to the hospital if they got really hurt. Yeah. But he would come out and mop and sweep, and he would wipe the towel. He would wipe the ropes. And then it would go, and then all of a sudden they would chant, Towel Boy, and he would come out. So that's Towel Boy, Eric Tuttle.
Yeah. So it turns out it was a nice ode to, you know, where they came from. So that's a good touch.
It's Feinstein. You know, it's Philly. Yeah. It's Philly. It's that Philly stank, man. Can't be mad at that. Give somebody a job. Yeah. Let them, if they're entertaining and they're around, let them work. What's the worst that can happen? He ain't doing much.
Yeah, and the little promos beforehand, and Carino's like, go out there and get yourself over, kid.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Steve Carino more and more.
How do you not, dude?
Yeah. But obviously, there wasn't much to the match. You know, Prince Nana pretty much destroyed him. So.
But Prince Nana is another guy who constantly evolved himself in Ring of Honor. Constantly. Making himself relevant. Before the Larry Sweeney's and before, you know, those guys. And because Ring of Honor didn't really have a lot of managers, per se, you know?
No.
But
he's obviously he had 15 million incarnations of the embassy, but right now what we're watching. He's Ciampa's his big this Sicilian psychopath.
He's a Midwest guy, isn't he? Ciampa?
Yeah, he's in well, his wife's from Milwaukee. I think he's from Ohio, like Gargano, I think.
I think so, yeah. I knew he was I knew he was a Midwest guy though.
Yeah, but I mean, he claims Milwaukee like in his interest because his wife's from here, so
good for her.
But yeah, I mean, he's huge in like AAW in Chicago. He's on their band, their Hall of Fame, and everything. So, yeah. A lot of fun, you know. So that's another podcast, but yeah, I mean, there wasn't much to the match. It was, you know, I don't remember Prince Nana wrestling much.
He did when he had to. He was like their version of he was their Bobby Heenan, basically. You know, he can wrestle really good, but he really didn't. You know, Bobby gets put over a lot when he first coming up because he can work, but when he stopped working is when we saw him as a manager in AWA and WWF. And then he was an announcer, but he can Nana can go, just that he didn't really at that point he embraced his role as a manager So. A lot of guys did that back in the day. Freddie Blassie was one of the most craziest hardcore wrestlers on the planet. Worse than Abby. Mm-hmm. Worse than Abby. Worse than.
Wow.
He was the precursor. He had color almost every show at one point in that San Francisco region of the NWA for Roy Scheider. Yeah. Right? But again, Freddie Blassie was like, all right, I'm done with this region. And by the time he got to Vince. He was the fashion plate. He was the pencil neck geek guy. He was the fucking hold on a second. You know, he was this guy. You know, so ironically, it's funny how we mentioned it. I had the doll, but thank you for the prop, Aline. So I was like, you know, a lot of guys did that. Not many. I'm gonna rephrase that. I mean, there were a lot of guys that did it, but did it well. So Nana did.
Yeah.
Nana, Freddie Blassie. You know, like. Then the guys who couldn't work became managers. Well, Johnny Valiant, too. Johnny Valiant was a prominent wrestler, but he was a better manager. You know what I'm saying? Captain Louis Albano was both. A lot of guys couldn't get Fuji. Fuji was an amazing wrestler.
Fuji, yeah.
And him and Saito.
Very huge out in this neck of the woods for AWA, so he's a fucking legend out here.
So Fuji, but there were a lot of guys who weren't. Jimmy Hart wasn't a good wrestler. You know, but there were a lot of guys who could just do either or. Prince Nana was that guy, so he falls in that line. So yeah.
Jimmy Hart in real life too. I've met that guy a few times, man. I love that guy.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So that was 53 seconds. We're not getting back of Nana fulfiller beating up on Towel Boy.
Yeah,
get yourself over, kid. You know.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
But we've got the Texas Wrestling Academy match pretty much. So I was a little confused. So whoever won the match, it was a tag team match, but whoever got the pin got a contract, but your tag team partner didn't get a contract?
That's how I took it.
Okay. it's a little, all right. You know, it makes for interesting stories, but I mean, why would you want your tag team partner to win? But. Whatever. Decent match, though. I mean, I couldn't find anything on this Oz guy. And it looks like, not to quote Choppy here, but Prince Iaukea didn't do much after this either.
No. The main guys in this match were Brian Kendrick and Michael Shane, who Michael Shane is he's the real cousin of Shawn Michaels.
I was just going to say, yeah, so.
Yeah.
And Spanky. You know, people sleep on Brian Kendrick, man. That boy can fucking go.
My favorite era of SmackDown before Paul Heyman was booking was when him and Paul Under were fucking running shit up in SmackDown.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about earlier 2000s around this time, actually, right after this time. I feel like he was pushed into it too quickly. Recently, he got himself into some trouble with the internet. Listen, I'm sure in 20 years when I'm almost away from this, someone's going to find something I said offensive or choppy or anybody else. But listen, at this point, we are who we are. We're human first and foremost. And I think the biggest flaw of being a human is not being able to forgive, not necessarily forget. And I don't want to get all spiritual and all this shit, but You hear guys saying shit now, and I listen to a lot of podcasts where a lot of rappers, they say, well, I regret using the N-word. And you're like, all right, well, and where I'm from, it was second nature, right? I'm still called that when I go home. When I go home, I'm still called that to some people, right? But yeah. In bad taste, people don't use it, right? I feel like you're allowed to have regrets and make mistakes, but people just don't want to. They don't want to. You know, they don't want to forgive and forget. You know, the whole Marty Scurll thing too. Like, you know, it was even though she's underage, it was consensual. Now he's only wrestling in Poland and like Puerto Rico or something like that. But
yeah.
You see my point. Like, it's talented guys and girls who say shit and they can't get a break because they're microscoped by the internet wrestling community.
Yeah, and listen, and Brian Kenner, I'm going to catch shit for this, but I don't care. But in his, obviously, what he said was pretty. And I like my conspiracies. I got no problem with, you know, the lizard people and all that shit. And some of the shit he said was pretty horrendous. But he owned it. You know, he apologized. He's like, dude, I was in a phase, la da da da. You know, so I can respect that. I mean, you know, I don't think he actually believes in, you know, a lot of that stuff. And you know, like I said, forgive people. You know, Josh Hader for the Brewers, people forget. He said some pretty heinous shit when he was in high school, but he owned it. He's like, dude, I'm sorry.
I was in high school, you know, like.
Right. You know, and he's just like, dude, but no, now no one mentions it, which is
good. No, because he's the top fucking closer in the National League. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, there were people who, like, you know, there are Cardinal fans who will crucify him. Pirate fans will crucify him. Cub fans will crucify him because he's not a Cub. He's not a Pirate. He's not a Cardinal. Yep. He's a Brewer. It's the same thing here in New York. I hate Carlos Beltran. Can't stand him. He's a Hall of Famer. Can't stand him.
Yeah.
He left his bat on his shoulder for 2006. He could have took us to the World Series. He didn't. Can't stand him. Okay. But because, I mean, he wasn't a Marlin. He wasn't a Brave. He wasn't a Philly. You know, but, and people, same shit, man. It's like, humans are flawed. We're flawed. We you know, sometimes we say shit we don't mean, or we say shit that doesn't make sense to another person, but it makes sense to somebody else because they know them. It's like I see this all the time on social media. Like, you know me personally. You and I have broke bread. We've hung out together. If I say something on social media and you read and go up, that's just Phil. Yeah. But if somebody who doesn't know me reads something that I write and doesn't know how I said it or how I worded it. Oh, you know, I've had guys on the podcast. I had listeners who reported me, dying me to Facebook, and that's why I can't post our page on Facebook. They went as far as putting their name on another screen name and admitting it to me, right? So the point is, you know, Kendrick is an amazing talent too. That's the messed up part of it, and he never got that. He never caught fire. He always would get sparks of it here and there, never got his due. Why didn't him in London get over? Because there was so many other they were like Hardy knockoffs, basically, almost.
Right.
So now that was this, the stank on them was that light cruiserweight, light heavyweight type of deal. But these are all Shawn Michaels guys, you know.
Yeah.
So it's
20, you know the whole 26-hour drive. So I mean, I'm sure they probably did. You know, and that was kind of like the gimmick of the match because Michael Shane and Spanky had to, you know, go drive back in the same car. And, you know, one's got a contract and the other one doesn't. So
Michael Shane had some, I believe he had some rub in TNA. I think he was in TNA for a little while.
Yeah, he seemed like he did. I mean, he had a lot of the tools, but I mean, he wasn't Xavier. But I mean, yeah, he had a decent run. And it's cool that he didn't actually play off, you know, his famous cousin. So, I mean, kudos to him on that. So, but I mean, yeah, he was wrestling up to a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's true.
So,
it's true. So that went 12 minutes, 29 seconds. It was, you know, just a showcase of the schools. And that happened a lot where guys had schools and they would lend out their talent and whatever. And it, you know, it was good wrestling, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, and Brian Kendrick fucking took an ass whooping in this match, too. So it took some of those spots. I was like, oof. But yeah, but he hits the sliced bread for the win, and he's got a Ring of Honor contract. So
how great is that? The sliced bread, huh?
Yeah.
Now it's not a finisher. Now that back then it was a finisher. Now it's a kick out at two and get your move set in. Get your move set in there. You fucking, you're no selling Mexican jumping bean, you know.
Yeah, there aren't many. There aren't many "quote unquote" finishing moves anymore, except for the one in Wing Angel. So
it's true.
Yeah. Then the big match of the night, which was not on Honor Club. Like I said, it was. I love Honor Club. You know, I'm still a member, but some of this early shit was cut weird. So like, when you're watching it, like on Honor Club, you can't watch it like as it's going. So it's each individual match, and you don't know the flow of the thing. And so I missed a lot when I first saw all this, and this match wasn't even on there. So, I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I don't know if they had problems, you know, licensing Eddie Guerrero or something. I don't know, but it's Super Crazy versus the recently fired from WWE Eddie Guerrero. And I think this was his first match after his DUI.
Yes.
The internet was a little unclear.
I knew that. I knew that before. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I knew that before that you sent me that, because it was pretty. I remember, what's his face? Did Vicky mention it? I think she mentioned it on Jericho's Cruise when they interviewed her, that she, that was one of his way back was doing the indies, and that was one of his first matches. So I'm sorry, guys.
A little shorter than I would have liked. You know, I mean, I could have watched these two wrestle for fucking 10 hours and I would have been okay. In all accounts, like I said, I mean, I know it's only 3 months after the DUI, but it sounded like, you know, Eddie was cleaned up, and all the backstage reports says he was clear and he was very polite and everything. So I don't know if that's rose colored glasses view.
Well, Eddie did wrestle for I believe Ring of Honor. Did he wrestle CM Punk, I believe? When that was in IWA, right? I forget.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. No, but yeah, from what I've heard and read, this was his coming back party. You know.
So yeah, this is the first step. Great match. And really, I mean, 50-50. I mean, there was no real dominant spots by either guy.
Super crazy.
You know,
I've seen, and I wrote this down. Actually, I'm glad I wrote this down. I wrote super crazy. Tell Motzbach about super crazy. I've seen Super Crazy live maybe a dozen times, 16 times, but he is one of the best technical luchadors ever. Even a botch from him cleans up. He is so technically sound, and it's disgusting how he's still – I mean, he had his run, though. I mean, he took him, ECW, whatever, but he was so good, man. And for them to put him with Eddie – as his dance partner for this match, for that IWA Intercontinental, but it was a WWE Intercontinental title. Basically, they couldn't put the camera up front because that's what it was. You know, it basically was the Reggie Parks belt, but it was the best dance, the match of the night. Basically, maybe the next match was good too, but this was too, and Eddie was jacked. He was so big. He was gassed up so much, didn't affect him though. He was Eddie was, you know, people, and you know, you've heard me talk about when fans put dead guys over more than they should. Owen Hart should have been world champion. Brian Pillman should have been world champion. Eddie Guerrero, stop right there. Eddie Guerrero was world champion. Why? Because of shit like this. Eddie took the art seriously. He was not only was he a performer, but he was a wrestler, and a long lineage of wrestlers in his family, back to his father, his grandfather. His brothers were amazing. You know, they had a wrestling ring in their backyard. They were the Young Bucks before the Young Bucks were the Young Bucks.
Our cat's named after Chavo Guerrero. So
my man, that Chavo Classic, I'm assuming, right?
Well, it's Chico. Yeah. You know, but Eddie, I mean, I just actually listened to recently Bruce Pritchard's podcast on Eddie Guerrero. And like you said, I mean, the guy lived wrestling. It was in his blood in more ways than one. And it was good to see, you know, good to see this match. I really, and supposedly, I don't know if this is a gimmick or not, but I mean, I guess Super Crazy was the one guy on his list he wanted to get off right off the bat.
Yep.
We see why.
Not by accident, man. I'm telling you, this shit doesn't happen by accident. If guys are, I mean, it's it's only going to make you better. It's like you're that band, and you're opening for another band that's like, okay, I'll open up for those guys because it's, you know, it's them, you know. We got a gig offered with No Redeeming Social Value, and No Redeeming was the fucking standard at that point in terms of the scene, playing not big, you know. Yeah, we're the first band out of 12, but you know what? I'll fucking open for them. We were supposed to open for Propane, but they get caught in a storm. We opened for Hatebreed when they were nobody. But there were 12 bands ahead of us. Okay, I don't mind. Put me on a bill. And so if any of them say, go get that kid Super Crazy, there's no way Super Crazy's not doing that. I'll open with that. I'll be the curtain jerker to the main event. I'll be the first fucking card of that. I'll be the first match of the night. I don't care. That's what wrestlers did. And then, now that they know there's more eyes and you're 2 years still removed from any kind of like streaming, like YouTube or Daily Motion, you're still 2-3 years away from that. You know, cause I think YouTube was 05, but this is all VHS, DVD, you know, like, and word of mouth. Hey, I got a guy. Italians are good for, hey, yo, you want something? I got a guy. You need that? I got a guy. We all got guys. You want something done? I got a guy, you know? So this was fantastic.
It definitely left me wanting more in a good way.
Yeah. And the match went almost 11 minutes. And we mentioned in the beginning of the podcast how those quick finishes can either fuck up a match or can just, you know, this could have told a story. If they would have stuck to it, you know, Super Crazy beats Eddie Guerrero. Like, it's like,
first day back.
Yeah. Eddie could have worked it. If he didn't go back, Eddie would have been like, all right, I'll fight this guy two more times. That's what Malenko did with him. I was at the first, was the first match? The one match that was in the arena was August 5th. I forget which one it was. Yeah, it was the first or the second one that I was at. You can actually see me on TV. But there was a trifecta, right? That they wanted that. They knew they were going to get signed somewhere else. They were showcasing this shit. Like, okay, look at me. Benoit did it too. They all did it at ECW. Like, they were showcasing their shit. You know? It was something that you did to get noticed, you know? Goes back to music, man. I heard
and it guy, worked.
Yeah, it worked. It worked, you know. But they could, if Eddie would have stayed on the indies, him and Super Crazy could have took that match anywhere.
Yeah.
They could have took it anywhere and gotten. They could have main evented. They could have main evented this card, actually. You know?
Yeah.
If this wasn't like the very first card, you weren't showcasing a lot of guys, but they were trying to get all the guys in. You could have. And this was Rob Feinstein being like, you know what? I know Eddie Guerrero. And now I know Super Crazy. So it's like, let me try to work that. And he did. So good for him.
God, you know, this is really the match they put on the marquee because, I mean, it's the name guy. I mean, obviously the main event is people that people, you know, like niche people would know, but everyone knows Eddie Guerrero. And even a step below that, people know is Super Crazy. So, it was a lot of fun. I was glad. I mean, buying this DVD was worth it just for that match. Because like I said, it wasn't even on it's not even on the interweb. So, and it's weird, you know, Super Crazy's over in Philadelphia. Who would have thought? So,
who would have thought that?
Yeah.
You know, Tajiri. He had dance partners, man. He had Tajiri, he had Mikey Whipwreck, he had Taz, he had Rob Van Dam, he had Sabu. He worked with all these dudes, so it's like super crazy and, shit, man.
And Carino did a great story of if people who are aware of Super Crazy, like, you know, this is Super Crazy's chance to break out of the, you know, the Tajiri, the RVD feuds, because I mean he was always the other guy. And this is his chance to shine, and they gave it to him. So I don't know if he wrestled for Ring of Honor after this or not. Super Crazy.
Again, I'm not sure. This was before me. This is pre-2007, so might have to dig the crates on that. Maybe he did spots. Maybe he did spot shows. I don't know. Maybe he did some. I don't know. Maybe he did something like that would work out. But I was thoroughly amused. I was very happy that this happened. You know, it just reminded me of ECW, GCW. Reminded me of that. It had that feel to it. You know, Feinstein definitely copied, and you know, imitation is the best form of flattery, man. No matter what you're doing, no matter how you get by in life. Imitation is the best form of flattery, and Feinstein did nothing but copy off his mentor, Paul Paul Heyman. So you can't knock the hustle, as Jay-Z would say, right?
Yeah. So then we go to our main event. And the biggest thing I took out of this match was, I mean, if Ring of Honor is setting the pace of what they're going to be, this match defined what Ring of Honor is going to be for the next 20 fucking years. Wow. I didn't know Bryan Danielson used to come out to The Offspring.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was before the final countdown.
I was like, what?
Yeah. Oh, he was a Shawn Michaels guy, too. He trained with Shawn Michaels.
And so. I didn't know that till this match. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. And, but I'm 20 years old. Loki's only 22. You know, like we talked about earlier, you know, Daniels is the elder statesman. But, man, this match fucking delivered.
I can't put Christopher Daniels over enough. You know, he's one of us, too. Like, he's a big fan of all the wrestling. He's a comic book guy. Like, he's funny in real life. He was so nice to my son, him and Kazarian. He was such – and he, you know – you're right. You nailed it. He set the tone for the next 20 years of this company. Ring of Honor did something better than most feds, and they put on really good main event shows. Main events and issues. Main events. That's why Final Battle was so over. The War of the World thing was so over when they brought in guys from Japan and Mexico. All their main event matches were top-notch. And a lot of those main event guys are on TV Monday nights and Friday nights. That's not by coincidence, bro. That's not by accident, I should say. That's not by accident. You know, so, I mean, the Tyler Blacks, the Kevin Steens, the Genericos, all these dudes are like, they're on TV now. Sami Zayn, you know. So it's like Samoa Joe. I mean, come on, CM Punk, Nat Danielson. Daniels is now the elder booker guy, road manager guy, you know, but
you watch Being the Elite at all?
I catch up. I watched like 3 or 4 episodes in a row, so I haven't seen it. The last episode I saw was when they were doing some kind of the title that they have, the belt. The one guy from who has it? The Canadian kid, what's their team name again?
I don't know which one's a bitch, but Matt Parker and Jeff. No,
what's the name of their team again? They're
2.0.
They were doing some like a beer pong challenge thing for the title. Yeah. So that's the last time I saw. I have to catch up. So,
well, Daniels is back on screen and being the elite, but because he's the head of talent relations, so he does this weird, crazy, I don't know if I can describe this well, but just like this weird, eerie Undertaker thing, where like he just shows up and he acts like all crazy, and he's like, oh, wait, you need to sign this release form for your need this for your reimbursement for your miles. It's a great fucking gimmick.
Good fan.
And just that guy on TV is awesome. So, and I know he's very, very involved still. I know he's not on screen, but, you know, he's 50 fucking 3, you know?
He doesn't look it, though. He doesn't wrestle like it. And he made a career for himself by the stuff he did in TNA. And then the stuff in Ring of Honor, like he was a prominent role in Ring of Honor the first couple of years of its existence. So,
And then Ring of Honor Explosion. I mean, you know, SCU was huge in Ring of Honor before it was an AEW thing, obviously. So
I own the This Is the Worst Town shirt. I love that shirt. That's one of my favorite skits on BT ever. That's why I love Scorpio Sky so much, because I have that shirt. I love that fucking shirt. I wear it like once a month too, if I go to like Jersey, you know.
But. Yeah, and just shit, I forgot what I was gonna say, but I mean, Daniels, I love this match. You know, that's what I was gonna say. I've caught some shit for this, but I really think that Daniels should have been the fourth person to be elected to the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame.
I've had this conversation with Tank, rest in peace. Everybody's gonna get into these Hall of Fames. It's not. Unless you have a lawsuit against them, or unless you're in bad graces with them in terms of like did something really bad or heinous, everybody's going to get in. You just have to acknowledge, I think it just depends on the powers to be, that of course the Briscoes get the first rub. It makes perfect sense. I would have put Daniels over Danielson, personal preference. Because
I would put him over Punk personally.
Right. Yeah. Punk too.
I mean, maybe because I had listed. I'm like you. I don't know him because he was only in Ring of Honor for 3 years.
Yeah.
And he, I don't know if he lit the world on fire in those 3 years or not.
But they're all going to get in. Joe's in. They're all going to get in. They're all going to. Danielson's going to. He's going to get in. Hold on a second.
I just think Daniel should have been an original over Punk. So, but right. Yeah. Yeah, I love this match. I don't know what else was going on in 2002, but this is a legit match of the year contender for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Loki's a fucking ninja.
Yeah,
that crazy fucking spinning dive kick thing he did on Dan. I was like, what did you just do, Bruce Lee? I was like, what the fuck? And then Daniel's selling the time where they were kicking him. You know, Danielson's kicking CD in the back, and then Loki pushes, this is how you kick him. You know, and then just Daniel's to take all those kicks from both those guys. I was like, I fucking loved it. I really enjoyed it. So, I mean, it set the pace.
It's at 20 minutes, and it was like, it didn't let up. You know what I'm saying? It was constant movement. Yeah. It had a great flow to it. All the guys can work. It was a great main event. It starts the beginning of an era, man. Literally, you know, and that pun was intended. You know, the era of honor officially begins now, and I'm glad it didn't go away. I knew it wasn't going to go away. I'm happy because when I was in a really bad place in my life when I went in 07, I was like, man, like I'm missing out, and I started going back to shows again. I started like picking up. I mean, I always read the magazines. I always kept up with the guys. But I never was going. I wasn't going to shows, and I took all that back. I'm like, you know, I need to put. I was working way too much, investing in my career. I had just gotten hired at the place I'm at now. I'm now 16 years later, so it's like, you know, it's like, all right, you know what? I started investing in me again, and that was one of the first things I did. You know, I went to a Slayer show, and I went to see Ring of Honor, and I was like, you know what? I'm missing out. And so when I met Michael's mom, and I started taking him to shows, his first show was Chikara. And was the tournament they do, the fucking the 6-man tournament. But I started taking him shows, and I would tell him, like, listen, these guys, you might see them on TV, you might not, you know. But now it's your job to keep up, and it brought a new fan base, it brought new eyes to pro wrestling. There was just more to it than sports entertainment, and not to say you can't entertain because you can.
But right,
Ring of Honor was the precursor to, you know, the internet darlings, you know.
So yeah,
this is a very, very good, looking back now, a very good first card for them.
Yeah.
From what they are now, you know.
Listen, Ring of Honor, I mean, I've told the story a couple times, but I mean, I fell out of wrestling for a long time. Actually right around 2002, 2003, but I didn't have internet access, so I didn't know what any of this shit was, and I wasn't doing message boards or trade dating or anything. I got back into wrestling because I was caretaking a place at a cable. So I started off with WWF, and then started hearing all this other stuff and podcasts. But the two things that got me really back into wrestling were Lucha Underground and Ring of Honor. And then obviously now I'm the man I am today when it comes to wrestling. So
talk about what you're doing with Will. Talk about what you guys are doing now. And what you guys, are you still working with it? Are you going to keep the same format?
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. So, you know, I technically have three podcasts, but the one Will and I do, it's just called Ring of Honor all the podcasts are called Marking Out with High Five Tom. As heard is the Visionaries Global Media, my friend Chad Diesel's media network. But yeah, it's called Ring of Honor Revelry. I picked that name very specifically, because this is literally a celebration. Revelry is obviously, a synonym for celebration. And this is literally, like we just talked about, a celebration of Ring of Honor. Because I almost got, I had moved to Western Massachusetts, and I almost went to Final Battle 2011, like on a whim. Cause I was actually cause I just moved out of Idaho. I actually had internet access, so I could like read about things. So basically the podcast is if I had actually started watching Ring of Honor in 2012. So yeah, we just watched Ring of Honor TV, and like I said, or whatever events come up. Like I said, this week, coming up, we've got Ring of Honor TV for March 4th, but also the anniversary show. You know, so we just review that every week, and drops every Saturday.
Dope.
You know,
where can everybody else find you on social media?
I am the Mott Spock on the Fakebook Machine, and then on Twitter I am High Five Tom. That's the number five, not five spelled out. So I'm on Instagram, but I have no idea how it works.
Well, congratulations. You did a episode of Turnbuckle Throwbacks. And it'll be a bonus episode. I don't want to know. I guess the next time the boys tap out on me is when I'll upload this and plug it to the moon. Or I'll just put it out as a bonus episode this week and next week, whatever it is. But maybe sure. WrestleMania weekend when Ring of Honor comes back, we'll put it up. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for doing this for me, sending me the DVD. And we're going to be doing more of these. And now, you know, especially with Choppy. And I don't even think Jay's even dipped into Ring of Honor. He just knows the current shit. So it's going to be all new to him, too. So I think we should all, you know, at one point get together. And, you know, technology won't fail me again. I can promise you that. I'll fix it. But we'll get we're going to be doing a lot more Ring of Honor this year. So,
well, and we forgot to mention their next show is that for the – I think it ends up being for the title. But that round robin tournament that the three of them are doing.
Yeah, hold on. Let's pull it. I think I can pull it up. Hold on a second.
I think that's where Loki wins the title. But, yeah, make a little story short. So they're going to basically just have each face each other twice in a round-robin tournament. Whoever wins is the best wrestler in the world.
Yep, same place, March 30th from the Murphy Rec Center. And it was I'll run down the card real quick. I mean, if we get it, we'll cover it. But let me run down the card real quick. It was March 30th, 2002. Daniels defeats the American Dragon in the first match of the round robin. Moff and Mac beat Prince Nana and Towelboy with Simply Luscious, whoever Simply Luscious is. Joey Matthews and Christian York, remember them? Defeats C.W. Anderson and Elax. Xavier defeats James Mariotto. The Natural Born Sinners beat the Boogie Knights in a rematch. Low Key defeats Chris Daniels in the second match of the round robin. Paul London and Chris Marvel ended in a no contest. Spanky beats Jay Briscoe. The SATs beat Red and Brian Excel and Divine Storm, which is Chris Divine and Quiet Storm, in a Lucha-style elimination tag match. And the American Dragon defeats Low Key in the third match of the Round Robin tournament at 32 minutes and 7 seconds with special guest. You know who the special guest referee was?
I don't.
The most dangerous man alive, Ken Shamrock.
No shit.
So that'll be that probably our next installment. Maybe we'll try to get that in its entirety, right? So
Well, Phil, I can't thank you enough for the platform. I appreciate this. I appreciate all you've done for me. You know how I feel. But
we appreciate you, man. Just helping us and supporting us all the time. It makes us want to do more shit. So
that's good. But listen, Faith and I will be back whenever. Rob's doing his Asian Film Festival back in July, so we're gonna go see that. So
you guys come up for that, and then we'll I think we'll do
hang out.
Do some pizza, do a pizza tour. I think we'll do.
Yeah, make some bad decisions. So speaking of, Jimmy's got Craig Ahead back on again this week, and they talk about pizza again. So
I spoke to Jimmy. We keep missing each other, but he's gonna get on the podcast. So because Jimmy's a big wrestling fan, so. We're gonna get him on. I don't know if I'll be on his, but it'll definitely be on mine. But we talked about it, and he invited me to his house for his house party he's having. I think he moved, having a house party, whatever it was. So I forgot what it was. I don't think it happened already. He invited me, but I don't know. I'll figure it out. But either way, Jimmy is literally, he's like 3 miles away from me right now, 3-4 miles away from me. So in Brooklyn, so we gotta hook up, but.
Yeah, another Broad Street Breakdown connection right there. So thanks to those guys.
That's it, man. Shout out to them.
Yeah, and shout out to Will, my co-host, and my buddies Chad and Diesel, the guys put out the network. And I looked at it too. I said one of my other podcasts is like, it's kind of like, actually speaking of Jimmy's, it's kind of like his style. It's more of like a conversation series called Chop It Up with Hi-Fi Tom. The only rule is we can't talk more than 10% wrestling. It's got to be something else. You know, because I was like, I hope to chop it up. Like, well, we can like compare EMT stories because we're both EMTs.
Jesus, I got that. That's gonna different
here. So
yeah, we'll do that. I got some fun stuff to talk about. I've lived a little bit of a life. I'm not, it's been interesting to say the least. You know, I'm not always doom and gloom. So
right,
but
yeah, I mean, the first one I did was with, let's say, with Chad and Diesel. It was really the first time they actually told like their origin story of how their podcast started and everything. So that's kind of like the point of the podcast, to really put people's stories over. So,
well, if you're coming up in July, maybe we'll do the anniversary episode, the 10-year anniversary episode around you guys coming in. It's July 3rd, yeah, the anniversary. So if you guys do come up in July, then maybe we'll save the anniversary show until you guys come in. We'll go get into it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, tell Rob to get his shit together, so I know Faith really wants to. That's her Christmas present, so.
Fuck that guy. I'll probably see you next week, KW.
Sweet.
All right, my dude. Be safe. Stay warm.
All right, dude. I appreciate it.
All right, brother. Be good.
All right, bye. Ciao.